Hi, and welcome to the Nat Decants podcast. I'm your wine-soaked host, Natalie McLean. This month's podcast is about sommeliers. How can a sommelier help you choose wine in a restaurant? Ever wondered what it's like to be a sommelier? You'll find lots of tips at the end of this story to help make selecting the right wine for your meal easy. You'll find more stories, the wines I reviewed this month, delicious wine-friendly recipes, and a free e-newsletter on my website at nataliemclean.com. And now sit back and enjoy this month's story entitled Wine and the Thin Red Bottom Line. Many people still view sommeliers as terrifying figures who intimidate and overcharge you, making your restaurant experience an expensive misery. The most common myth, says sommelier Richard Betts, is a crusty, grumpy old guy in a tux. In fact, he points out that your sommelier today is much more likely to be a cheerful young man or woman, super jazzed about wine and food. Betts should know. He's worked for the past 9 years as a sommelier at the prestigious Little Nell restaurant in Aspen, Colorado. He's also just one of 89 master sommeliers in the world, a coveted accreditation he earned in 2003 after years of study, tasting, and exams. He believes that a good wine steward is part of the comfort factor in dining out. Quote, restaurants nourish the souls of diners, even in only a small way for us one evening, he says. Another veteran sommelier, Greg Tresner, formerly of Marie Elaine's restaurant in Arizona, has a similar view of the new relaxed role, gleaned from his 25 years in the business. Quote, the pretentiousness is fading quickly, he notes. Even though we're a fine dining establishment, I don't wear a tuxedo anymore. Many people find even the word sommelier cumbersome. End quote. Still, misconceptions persist. Barb Phillips, sommelier at the Fish House in Vancouver, British Columbia, says that they're especially related to price. One myth, she says, is that we look down on people who don't spend a lot of money on wine, or force people to spend more than they can afford. But that's absolutely not our role. We're here to help guests enjoy themselves. Perhaps that money myth stems from the mistaken notion that sommeliers are all on commission, paid according to how much expensive wine they push. True, most do get a commission, but it's combined with a salary and a share of the tips. And these sommeliers take a longer-term view. Sure, the sommelier is motivated to increase wine sales, but not at the expense of losing repeat business, says Betts. My own wine sales have grown because I find the right bottle for the customer, not because of upselling. In fact, I'll often downsell a bottle to someone because I know it's an amazing wine for less money than they had planned to spend. Such customers are often so grateful for his consideration that they become regulars. The math is easy, he points out. Do you want to stick it to someone just once for $200 and never see her again? Or would you rather sell her a $60 bottle every week and have her recommend the restaurant to others? Increasing repeat business and customer loyalty is just one of the benefits a sommelier brings to the restaurant. Good ones are consummate salespeople, expert, professional, and in tune with the customer's needs. Yet some restaurant owners assume that well-known wine brands will just sell themselves. They're wrong, says Betts. If diners aren't motivated to try new wines, sales tend to stagnate. Still, many owners perceive a sommelier as an unnecessary expense in a low-margin business. Some may even be right. Not every restaurant may need a sommelier, but most need at least one or two people who know about wine, whether it's the manager, the bartender, or a few well-informed servers. Another sommelier who's a big advocate of wine training is Melanie Desjeunet, sommelier at André's French restaurant in Las Vegas. She points out that not only are more and more restaurant staff taking courses in wine, but also some sommeliers are also going to culinary school to complement their wine expertise. She observes that it's the staggering amount of information about wine that keeps most sommeliers humble. We know we always have so much more to learn, she says. The high standards set by the Master Sommelier and Master of Wine exams don't allow for arrogance. She also points out that we don't have a long history of wine drinking in North America, so sommeliers are important to help diners find wines they enjoy. But as consumers become more educated about wine, restaurants need to keep up with them, she says. Those are all good reasons why sommeliers are constantly reading about wines and tasting them. As a professional wine steward, Tresner believes one reason diners choose one establishment over another, it's because of the sommelier. Mary Elaine's restaurant used to use his Master Sommelier accreditation in its marketing, together with its prestigious Grand Award from the Wine Spectator magazine. As Betts points out, the issue goes beyond cost and image. When restaurant owners consider why they're in the business and what makes a restaurant great, they have to conclude that it's more than just about making a profit, he says. It's even more than just feeding people. It's about nurturing them. For a restaurant, a sommelier on staff can save money. Owners may not have the time or interest to learn about wine, and therefore may overpay for off vintages from famous wineries or buy cooked wines that were stored at high temperatures. A sommelier knows the telltale signs of improper storage, leaking bottles and low fill levels known as ullage. They ensure that wines are shipped properly to the restaurant and then stored in good conditions until they're sold. Sommeliers also ferret out undiscovered and underpriced wines from regions and producers that save the owner money and still offer great value to the customer. They help owners avoid billing errors and confusing a winery's regular and reserve lines. In fact, many sommeliers today function as assistant managers. They don't just buy wine and manage an inventory. They also train staff on wine service and organize private party events. They're the main connection between the chef and the cooking staff at the back of the house and the servers and maitre d' at the front of the house in the restaurant. Barb Phillip, who dines out a lot along the West Coast and teaches sommelier courses in Vancouver, says that most restaurants in the United States have at least one sommelier. At least the good ones do. Overheads like the cost of wine and labor tend to be higher in Canada, she says, so there seems to be a lower percentage of sommeliers. If my students want to work in the restaurant business, they're usually scooped up before graduation. On the subject of training, Philip advises aspiring sommeliers to get a solid grounding in service skills, taste as much as they can, visit wine regions, and take language courses to help communicate with wineries and other countries. Although Betts, Tresner, Dagenais and Philip all have extensive training, they all started by pursuing a personal passion for wine while moonlighting from other jobs or studies. Tresner and Philip were waiters. Betts was a graduate student, and Dagenais was an executive secretary. What I find most intriguing as a waiter was answering diners' tough questions about wine, he recalled. Over time, I was asked to talk to guests about wine questions no one else could answer. So I began advising my employers about buying wine for the restaurant list. I spent a lot of time in wine shops scouring the shelves for bottles, pestering the sales staff for information, jotting down notes and looking up details at home. For his part, Betts was bit by the good living bug, as he says, in graduate school. I was cooking dinner one evening and I opened a bottle of Frescobaldi Chianti Napozzano. The aroma transported me back to a dinner I'd had with my wife 4 years earlier in Tuscany. I remembered exactly what she wore, where we sat, and what we ate. It was all so specific and so compelling that I wanted to learn more. So the next day I canceled my plans for law school and applied to work as a cook. Working with the rhythms of a restaurant kitchen is an excellent way to understand how food interacts with wine. After 2 years, I stepped out into the front of the house. Philip and her husband had read about wine and taken vacations in wine regions for several years before she landed a job as a sommelier. At the time, I was barely aware of the word, she acknowledges. However, her training as a waiter and a personal recommendation from a chef who was a friend helped. Once I got the position, I scrambled to improve my knowledge. I talked to wine sales representatives, read books, and of course tasted a lot. When the British-based Wine and Spirit Education Trust, WESET, eventually offered courses in the city she signed up, and last fall she became one of 265 people worldwide to hold the title of Master of Wine. Dagenais had been working as an executive secretary for the owners of several hotels for a number of years before becoming a sommelier at age 30. A friend in the wine industry convinced her that she had great potential to sell wine based on her passion for it. At the time, she didn't have any education in wine, although now, 6 years after being in the role, she has a certificate from the Master Sommelier Organization and is working toward the full designation. In today's competitive restaurant market, sommelier expertise goes far beyond just recommending a bottle. It also goes beyond service skills like knowing how to serve wine at the right temperature, in the right glass, with the right dishes. Sommeliers today also need to develop a sense of trust with their customers and a knack for subtly bonding with them over wine. For instance, Dagenais still tells a story about a husband and wife with incompatible wine tastes. The man ordered a glass of full-bodied red, but his wife said she didn't really care for wine. He was telling her how good the bouquet was and explaining the flavors while she just sat there. So I brought her a glass of white wine on the house, a light, refreshing German Riesling. She loved it, and I love seeing the two of them talking about their wines. More challenging are customers who like to play test the sommelier by showing off their own wine expertise. Diners usually don't try to stump their waiters about food, yet some seem compelled to try it with wine. Fortunately, there are relatively few of those people. For Philip, the toughest situation is when a customer thinks that a good bottle is faulty. I once opened an expensive, mature Bordeaux that a customer said was corked, she says. It wasn't the policy at our restaurant to taste the wine before the customer, so I took his word for it. I went to fetch another bottle from the cellar, and on the way I stopped to try the wine. It was absolutely sound. In fact, it was outstanding. Philip was willing to absorb the cost of that wine. She used it for a special staff tasting later, but she wasn't willing to open another $400 bottle with the risk of it being unnecessarily rejected too. So she drew upon her diplomacy and explained to the customer that she remembered the other wines in the same shipment exhibited similar characteristics. "I apologize for not mentioning this earlier," she recalls. "Then I recommended he choose something else from the list, and I tried to guide him gently toward the younger, more robust red that I thought he really wanted." When it comes to having their expertise recognized, neither Dagenais nor Philip could find being a woman an impediment. 10 years ago, I'd arrive at the table, and customers would still be looking over my shoulder to see if the sommelier was on his way, laughs Phillips. But now they assume I'm the wine person, and in fact, I think many people find a woman more disarming. They often ask me questions that aren't about the wine list. For instance, people are always wondering about my career and where they can take wine classes. For many careers, expertise isn't enough to make a top-rank sommelier. People excel at work for which they have a passionate zeal, a fever to keep learning, and an urge to share that passion with others. I love people, helping people enjoy themselves, says Betts. It's extremely gratifying to make people happy for a living. For all four sommeliers, the greatest satisfactions are both technical and interpersonal. Delighting guests with innovative wine and food pairings on the fly gives me great pleasure, Tresner says. I love introducing diners to less familiar wines, such as Gruner Veltliner or the White Varietals of Alsace, or some rosés from Rioja. However, he derives the most satisfaction from collaborating with the chef to create dynamic new harmonies. We experiment with dishes and great wines from around the world, inventing 12-course dinners, he says. The experience should be an exciting gastronomic tennis match for the guest. We serve the food and volley with the wine. As far as Betts is concerned, I feel as though I've won the job lottery. The world of wine is incredibly diverse. Each bottle represents a different people, places, history, and cuisine. I wouldn't change a thing, except maybe pursuing my passion earlier. And now here are 5 questions you can ask your sommelier that will help you get a better bottle the next time you're dining out in a restaurant. First of all, tell your sommelier which kinds of wines you've enjoyed lately. Are they usually red or white, light or full-bodied? Do they come from a particular region or grape? If you mention specific wineries, that'll also give your sommelier an idea of your price range. Here's some other questions to ask them. Number one, what are your favorite red and white wines? Two, what's the newest wine on this list and why did you add it? Three, would you please describe the texture and taste of the wine you're recommending? Four, what's your favorite food and wine pairing on this menu? And five, which wine offers the best value for money on this list? I hope you've enjoyed this podcast, and if you have, we'll let other people know about it. There's more information about my book, Red, White, and Drunk All Over, and a free e-newsletter at nataliemclain.com. Tune in again next month for another exciting episode, and in the meantime, drink up. Cheers, Natalie. This podcast and its content are a copyright of Natalie McLain, 2008.